Welcome to KSSM's I'm Talkin' Jazz, where we meet and greet with amazing individuals who make America's true art form jazz, jazz. We'll visit with the talented players, the unsung heroes, and the passionate patrons who bring the music to life. Stay tuned as we welcome this week's guest on I'm Talkin' Jazz. I'm Chris Cortez, and today we have a very special program. It's the first of a four-part series that will highlight the San Francisco jazz scene going back to the 1950s when there were a plethora of venues presenting this music. And what better way to take a trip back in time other than to have someone who is in the middle of it all? We're talking about master pianist and composer Larry Vukovich, an important figure in the San Francisco Bay Area jazz scene for the last six decades, recognized around the country as a devoted champion of the music. Born in Kotor, Montenegro, former Yugoslavia in the mid-1930s, Larry Vukovich came to San Francisco at the height of its flourishing 1950s jazz scene. After studying at San Francisco State University, Larry Vukovich began performing with saxophonist Brew Moore and subbed for his mentor and teacher, pianist Vince Guaraldi. Eventually, he would play with a slew of stars who include John Hendricks, Mel Torme, Dexter Gordon, Red Norvo, and many, many others. Today, Larry Vukovich will take us on a virtual guided tour through the streets of San Francisco's jazz club scene through his eyes and personal stories. yeah, Good to the Last Drop, and that's music by Harry James and his orchestra, and some beautiful, beautiful sounds. And we have Larry Vukovic in studio joining us, and we're going to go back in the time machine, Larry Vukovic, 1955, the El Patio at Market and Van Ness, which is became the Les Vogel Chevrolet building, I guess, eventually, right?
It's still there.
It's still there. Yeah. Amazing. So why don't you set up the scene for us? Because I know this is one of your earliest memories coming to the San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, I came in 51, and then maybe by 52, 53, one place you can get in are the theater and even ballroom, you know, if you don't drink, you know, you can go listen. So Harry James and the other white bands played at El Patio. Woody Herman, Les Brown, great bands. During those days, the black bands played down on Market Street on Paramount Theater, Market and Jones. And also there was a Downbeat Club further on Market where I heard Count Basie. So I would go to those, and then little by little I would start going to clubs. You can have a fake ID, or Blackhawk had a chicken wire fence, you know. And I heard Miles and Train there. I heard Dizzy's band. Let me give a little picture of Broadway, the busiest jazz street. You're walking towards Broadway Tunnel going west. You're going up the hill. You're on the corner of Montgomery and Broadway where the street levels off. On your left corner, it's Basin Street West. Duke Ellington, Hampton Hawes Trio, Woody Herman. On the right, Sugar Hill, it's a vocal club. Carmen McRae, Lambert Hendricks and Bavan, Joe Williams. You go further on that side, there's Ants 440. An interesting story, Vince Guaraldi was playing there after his big hit came out, and Miles needed a piano player. He walked in, and he asked him to join the band, and Vince turned him down. How many people know that? Not many, because he had his hit going, you know.
Yeah, what hit was it?
That Cashew Fade to the Wind, and also the successful recording Impressions of Black Orpheus. Further from Ants 440, you have El Matador with Spanish decor. You have Latin bands like Al Jeter. I used to play intermission sometime. Then they had also Brazilian Jorge Gilberto. They had MJQ. They mixed the music. Across the street is the famous Jazz Workshop. Unbelievable. Monk, later Coltrane, when he got going, you know, in the 60s with his own band. Sonny Rollins would play first there before the bridge band. One time I heard him with a pianoless quartet with Henry Grimes on bass and 19-year-old Freddie Hubbard. Then later I would hear Sonny, how about this combination? Elmo Hope on piano, Scott LaFaro on bass, Lenny McBrown on drums. So then you had Cannonball live recordings, Wes Montgomery, and I heard Wes Montgomery sit in with Coltrane. That was very interesting.
Absolutely.
So then you go to the corner, there is Kearney. Right there, the left down the hill, Italian restaurant Lupo. They had Chinese chef, and people say, "What do you mean? What is going on?" He said, "Tommy knows Mama Lupo's recipes better than I do, so we gave him an affectionate name, Tommaso." And the place is still there.
It's
Tommaso.
Really? So we're talking about just the North Beach
just
area.
Just the North Beach.
Right now. And that was over, I think, you mentioned at least half a dozen clubs already.
Yeah, it's more. Yeah, sure.
So around at this time, how many venues were happening at?
Oh, man, when you take the whole Bay Area, I would have to say there were about 30 at least when you take Sausalito, Oakland, Redwood City.
Wow.
And different areas of San Francisco. In the Mission and 30th, you had a club called Two C's, C Stand. There were two Charlies that owned. And you're going to hear a recording by Benny Bart's quintet, a trombone player that could have been a major star. Wait till people hear this guy play, Fred Murgi.
Okay, and I'm excited.
And then in the avenues, Arguello and Geary, now it's at Animal Hospital, Brew Moore. swinging two-tenor quintet, a great session. I mean,
so literally, you could hop in a cab, and within a couple miles or a few miles, you can get to across the city and hear all kinds of different artists.
You were confused. Same
where
night.
To go? Yeah, how did you know
got
where to
all
go?
Those bands the same nights. Where are you going to go? The good thing was they were playing six nights a week. So you could, if you don't go one night, you go on another night, you
right.
know. And people in those days, TV was minimal. Home entertainment centers didn't exist.
And so people went out.
Experience live, like how was it for me, a teenager from the old country, standing in front of the big bands?
Yeah.
You know, what a sound. Today, rock music, some cats are okay, but mostly it's kind of a simplistic and boring, two, three chords, come on.
So what was that experience like for you coming in and walking into the El Patio and hearing Harry James Orchestra with Buddy Rich on drums?
You were, you know, the groove, the harmonies, you know, the big band sound, you probably couldn't sleep that night.
That's right. Larry Vukovich joined us in studio, and we're talking about the jazz club scene in the San Francisco Bay Area circa 1950s. Now, Larry, you mentioned that there were, the El Patio was mainly a white club.
Yeah, that was a ballroom. People danced, but that was the scene of the day. It was kind of sad.
So what were the experiences different when you would go to, say, the El Patio and go to a black club?
Oh, of course. You had a integrated audience, you know, and the African-Americans, it's their music, man. They originated, and the feeling is totally different, you know. And like the Jazz Workshop was that way, Black Hawk too, but Workshop more.
So why don't you set up the next cut for us? Because I think we are now going to Duke Ellington.
Okay.
Great memory, Caravan. So why don't you set
so
this one up?
I go to Paramount Theater. I go in. I see a band. I don't know anything who they are. There's a drummer with two bass drums. Well, later I realized Louis Belson.
Yes.
And that was Duke.
Thank you.
This is KCSM's I'm Talking Jazz. You're listening to a conversation with pianist and composer Larry Vukovich, who's taken us on a personal virtual tour through the 1950s San Francisco jazz club scene. I'm Chris Cortez. Wow, some bassy music there, and Duke Ellington.
Well, oh man, the theaters in those days would have bands, and at the Paramount, as I mentioned, Duke was playing. And further down on Market, there was a Downbeat Club. That's when I heard Basie. This band was before Splanky, the Atomic cover with Sonny Payne. This one had Gus Johnson on drums. What I remember is Gus' big smile, like Billy Higgins playing. Great big band drummer.
Oh, yeah.
And speaking of Duke, by fortune, my life has been like a movie. I tell you, one thing kept opening up after another. 10 years later, I get a call to play a trio with wonderful bass player John Mosher at a club on Bush Street, which was called the Neve. It used to be called Say When. Billie Holiday, Charlie Parker played. This was in the basement. And we played intermissions, 2 weeks. And on the opening night, Brew Moore was there. And I have a solo at the end of the blues, and the band is setting up and starting to riff. And Duke takes the mic, and he said, if you're wondering why my trumpets were riffing behind the pianist, he said, he's a swinging pianist. I want to drown him out. So for me, that was a big compliment.
That is a compliment.
exciting days, man.
And what year was this about?
That was 61.
That was 1961. So you were well into the scene by then, because I think you really entered in the scene with Brew Moore in the late 1950s.
That's right. And little by little, I started working. Then Mel Torme came to town in 63 on Kearney Street at a club called Off-Broadway. Mm-hmm. And then John Hendricks called 64, 65, and I went on a road with him.
Wow.
Just, but before John Hendricks, after Mel Torme, I should say, I spent almost a year in Europe. It was an urge to go back. And people told me when we were in Paris, go to Copenhagen. That's
oh, where, yeah.
And Dexter, he's got a home gig at the Montmartre. Of all the people, the Danish pianist who was a house pianist hires me when he went on vacation. How can you? I don't know.
Yeah.
2 weeks I played
with
Dexter.
So you did a 2-week run with Dex.
I have to say something. When I asked Dex, see, the great guys are not racist. The great guys care about music. They're not insecure. The guys who are insecure, they'll put you on a trip.
All right.
Dexter would come. I said, Dexter, how do you like Mel Torme? He's great. Look at this. Out of the blue, he mentions this. Glenn Miller dance band had a great tenor player, Tex Beneke. Dexter said out of the blue, Tex Beneke was a wonderful player. Check him out sometime. Soulful sound.
Most definitely.
That's the way the great guys were.
That's right. Well, you mentioned classical, and I know classical was where you started.
I did.
With your musical career. But when you came to California, the San Francisco Bay Area, you studied at San Francisco State a little bit, and you also studied with Pat Jader, which I just found out, Cal Jader's wife.
She was sophisticated harmonically, and she's the first one to introduce me to Bill Evans. I didn't know who he was.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then when she was expecting... Vince was playing with Cal. She said, go to Vince. Also, I studied with Richard Wyatt.
That's right.
Who lived in Berkeley. So,
Richard's a homeboy from
Oakland.
Oh,
yeah. You know, it was wonderful.
So how did you meet up with Vince Guaraldi? Because that's an incredible story, because we all know that Vince didn't take on students or didn't really mentor people.
I don't know how. I went to Blackhawk. I enjoyed his playing. He had a lot of energy. He played great montunos, as we can hear later.
Mm-hmm.
I just told him who I was. Somehow, how to explain, he invited me to his house. And I won't mention the piano player. Poor guy, his cousin. He turned him down.
Oh, really?
So
he wouldn't even teach his cousin.
Yeah, he said, man, I'm his cousin, and he turned me down. Anyway.
You must have bought him baklava, I think.
I brought him. My mother would make phenomenal European pastries.
Right.
Anyway, so I would go listen to Bud Powell. He would have Bill Evans, Red Garland, and so on.
Wow.
All that stuff. So,
speaking of Bill Evans, Bill, of course, played with Miles Davis's group, and I think that's where we're going to go next. We're going to go back to, I guess, the Blackhawk, right?
Yeah, that was the main club from 49 till about mid-60s. The workshop took over early 1960 or so, 59. But first time I heard Miles was with Coltrane. I didn't know who he was. It was new music. But one thing that resonated, you couldn't miss with Red Garland, Philly Joe, and Paul Chambers.
Oh, yeah.
And you can Red has a solo towards the end of this tune. Oh, the whole thing goes to another place.
It's incredible, I know. Yeah. Miles Davis with Red Garland there. Philly Joe Jones, my man on drums. Beautiful stuff. And the track that's known as Blues on 5, right? And we're speaking with Larry Bukovich in studio. He's taking us on a virtual tour through the 1950s San Francisco jazz club scene. Wow, Larry. Very, very cool.
Like I said, my life has been a movie. How did I know that 15 years later I would be a part of Philly Joe's band in Europe? And, you know, and
you didn't even know these guys when you walked in the
club. No, I didn't, but the music was so exciting, you know, as you see
I
in
can
those
see
days.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, we're going to go next to some Cal Janer music, right? So why don't you set that up for us?
The Giants came to San Francisco, could have been 58, I'm not sure. And Orlando Cepeda loved Latin music, so he would hang at the Blackhawk regularly, and Cal Janer wrote a tune for him, Viva Cepeda,
That's
great
right.
Montuno. Al McKibben on bass, who was with the original Dizzy band that included Chano Pozzo, Willie Bobo, Mogo Santa Maria, and people can hear how good Vince Guaraldi played Montuno, Latin music.
Now, was this your first experience hearing this type of music?
Yeah, I would go to Blackhawk and Cal Janer would have long runs there. Today, you're lucky you get them one night a month. Those guys played for several months in a club.
So you could
Same
really,
band.
You could really develop a band.
That's right.
That
you know, it was different time. People went out. So, sometimes you're in a venue, we can't repeat you this year. You're already playing. What do you mean? Music is like food for the soul. You're going to repeat water every day or other dishes. So you can repeat music if it's good for the soul. Dexter played for 3 months in Copenhagen. Repeat? Yeah, but you hear food for the soul.
That's right.
Here, no, we can't. We only play once a year. Come on. Another world, man.
It's very, very, very true.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that you've been through the different decades, starting in the late 1950s, and here you are, 2020.
Well, I thank God 2020 is the 40th anniversary of Blue Balkan, the first album
really?
To fuse ethnic, and that was 1980. This is 2020. So
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Anyway, I'm fortunate. A lot of garlic, no medication.
That's right. Well, let's listen to Cal Jader now here at KCSM, the Bay Area's jazz station. Cal Jader with Viva Cepeda, his salute to Orlando Cepeda. And this is from Cal Jader live at the Blackhawk Inn concert. And we are speaking with Larry Vukovich in studio here on I'm Talking Jazz. And this conversation with Larry Vukovich just got started. And here we are at the end of the show. And we're going to have you back, Larry, for more parts. I guess we're going to do a four-part series this whole month here on I'm Talking Jazz. So I look forward to it.
Yes. It's always exciting being with you because you're a great DJ. You're a musician. And as Lord Buckley said, you're a flipster, hipster, and a swinging daddy.
Well, I thank you for that. The check is in the mail, my man. And this is the I'm Talking Jazz. You've been listening to a conversation with pianist and composer Larry Vukovich. To stay apprised of all things Larry, just visit him online at LarryVukovich.com. For KCSM's I'm Talking Jazz, I'm Chris Cortez, inviting you to join us next week for part two of a four-part series as we continue our virtual tour through the unforgettable San Francisco jazz club scene of the 1950s and beyond with Larry Vukovich. See you then. I'm Talking Jazz is a production of FM 91 KCSM.